In 2009, several thousand children and their families joined a world-leading study called Growing Up in New Zealand.
We started with pregnant mums because we are interested in their child growing up, following around 7,000 children in the context of their families over around about 21 years.
Those children are now teenagers, and the details collected about their lives have fed numerous studies and policies and media stories.
It's produced reports on the children's health and well-being, how they're affected by disability or depression, how they're going through puberty, how housing and homelessness affects them.
Around 1,000 of them are Māori, and the study is revealing valuable information about what could improve their health, well-being and education.
Every person in policy formation in New Zealand wants our children to do much better than they are doing now. But if we don't have reliable data, we can only make our choices based on bias, prejudice, and dogma.
But last week, it was revealed that the government-funded contract for Growing Up in New Zealand was not renewed, and future funding is up in the air. In the same week, another long-term study into children's well-being was scrapped. StatsNZ has ended its Living in Aotearoa survey, and there are warnings that it leaves a big gap in our understanding of child poverty.
How are we going to see a look in to children's lives and the impact of poverty persistence that, unfortunately, without a longitudinal survey, I do worry that we're not going to get as rich a picture as we really, really need to.
So, do we really want to know about what's going on in the lives of our young people? Do we need to know? What do we do with that information? Is it too easy to throw it on the bonfire of public service cost-cutting? I'm Sharon Brett-Kelly. Today on The Detail, we look at the uncertainty around growing up in New Zealand and the axing of StatNZ's Living in Aotearoa survey. Laura Walters is Newsroom's political editor.
This Living in Aotearoa survey was set up to measure whether families or children were living in persistent poverty. And if you don't have that data, then you're not going to have a measure of whether there's persistent poverty. So it might look really good for the government. You might be able to say, oh, we haven't got very many families living in persistent poverty. But can you say that truly if you don't have the data to back it up?
StatsNZ kind of held it up as this first of its kind survey, reaching gangs, reaching children living in hardship, getting information about child poverty. After just two rounds of interviews, it's been scrapped. Is this embarrassing for StatsNZ?
I imagine that StatsNZ did not want to have to make this decision. This, as you said, this was held up as a first of its kind longitudinal survey. It was meant to be measuring child poverty, especially that persistent poverty measure. So understanding which families were struggling to get out of poverty or which ones were drifting in and out of poverty. As you say, that there was some really good data collection going on there, targeting communities that are often kind of fall through the cracks. Because they're not captured by things like tax data, if the adults in the household aren't earning an income, or you know, other administrative data isn't kind of capturing them. So this was a way to find all of those families, to capture data around those children especially. StatsNZ were very proud of this survey, and it's really unlikely that they wanted to cut it, but like every other ministry at the moment, they have to find efficiencies. They need to cut programs, they need to cut jobs, and this, while being very good quality data, it's also incredibly expensive to gather. And they found that it wasn't a really inefficient way of getting these statistics and gathering this data. And so, yeah, after just two rounds of interviews, they have had to cut this survey.
Costing roughly $20 million each year to pull the data together for this survey.
That wasn't really a true representation of how much this was costing. So $20.7 million a year across all of their work to measure child poverty data. But actually this living in Aotearoa study was costing them much more. They weren't able to supply the exact figure to me when I asked for it, but we know that there were cost blowouts when it came to this survey. And there, it's not on its own there where in terms of the cost blowouts. It is becoming increasingly expensive to gather data, and especially to gather this type of data, that longitudinal work where they're going back to the same people over and over again, where they're having to build trust, build relationships, make sure that they're not dropping out of the survey or the study. It's really expensive. Full disclosure, I was actually a participant in this survey, and the amount of chasing that the person had to do to find to get us to agree to be in the survey, to find a good time to sit down. It's hours worth of questions backwards and forwards. There's a lot of work to get marginalised and hard to reach communities to engage in this survey and this data collection. And that can literally mean these interviewers traipsing across the countryside into huts, into places that, aren't in urban centres where they can just go door to door knocking and finding people to sign up. They're having to go into communities that they don't have good connections with and find these people and convince them to take part in it and convince them to stay as part of the survey. So it's incredibly expensive. People are time poor. They don't want to participate in these types of lengthy interviews and interviews that come up every year or every couple of years. But there are lots of reasons why this is incredibly expensive, and there are cost blowouts for this survey, but for a lot of other surveys as well.
And I have to ask you, how did you get to be part of it?
So after the census in 2023, a person knocked at my door and they said that they were doing this Living in Aotearoa survey and asked if our household would be part of it. And I know how hard it is for them to get people to sign up to these types of things, and also how important it is to have good quality data. So I agreed. And the poor woman who was our interviewer, she had so much patience. We exchanged so many text messages, but eventually myself and my partner both did separately the survey with her. And the questions covered all kinds of areas. Obviously, when we're talking about poverty, there are things around your income and your disposable income, whether you could afford to heat your house, whether you had any mould in your house, whether you could buy fruits and vegetables and proteins, whether you ever could afford to go on a holiday, how your mental health was.
Well, as Laura says, a special part of the Living in Aotearoa survey was its focus on poverty persistence, something that's really difficult to measure, but is required under the Child Poverty Reduction Act. Here's Dr. Claire Ahmad, the Chief Children's Commissioner.
It's not something that right now we have a deep understanding of in Aotearoa, New Zealand. We don't understand the exact extent to which the numbers of children are experiencing persistent poverty. So losing this survey means that we are going to really need to look at how we're going to get an understanding of that picture when it comes to this group of particularly disadvantaged children and young people in Aotearoa.
And how is that information gathered? For, when you want to try and measure poverty persistence and over time, how do you do that?
Yes, so that was the really valuable thing about the Living in Aotearoa survey. It was a purpose-built and designed survey that had taken a number of years to design. So they actually involve field workers, survey collectors, going out into people's homes, into their whare, into their communities, sitting with them and actually working through the survey, asking them a series of questions. And in this instance, it was going to be over the course of 6 years, asking those same questions to build up a picture over time. It would have been really understanding the why and the how, because through something like administrative data sources, we can get quite a good understanding of the what, but we can't get to that richer level of detail about the why and the how. And here I'm talking about the why and the how around persistent poverty and the impacts it has on children's lived experience every day.
This is costly and time consuming. These long longitudinal surveys cost millions and millions of dollars.
Well, look, I completely acknowledge the fiscal constraints in the environment that we're working in right now, but that doesn't get us away from the fact that good data is essential if we are to make progress in our country when it comes to the outcomes and the rights of children. And you know, right now we have a government that is committed to a social investment approach grounded in evidence and data to inform policies and investment. And so we really do need to actually be doubling down on data that helps us to understand children's lives, helps to shape where we focus those policies and that investment that's going to actually be effective and responsive to address some of these big issues that are affecting children's lives. And then more so also so that we can track and understand and measure progress over time.
I think when we hear about these longitudinal studies about life in New Zealand, we immediately think of the Dunedin one, the famous one that's more than 50 years old now. And I think some people might say, well, we've already got one. We've already got one that tells us how people are growing up in New Zealand and what their lives are like. Why do we need two others?
Well, look, absolutely. We have been leading the game in longitudinal studies when it comes to children's lives in our country for a long time. However, why we need to have contemporary studies such as Living in Aotearoa, the survey around persistent poverty, and growing up in New Zealand around contemporary experiences of childhood in Aotearoa, is that they give us that up-to-date picture and the up-to-date data that can help to inform decisions, policies and investments in real time. The other thing that I would say about growing up in New Zealand is that now we see the direct views of children and young people coming through in that survey data. And, you know, all children have a right to participate in the decisions that affect them. And so the fact that we have their views coming through means that even more strongly we can help to inform the policies and investments that they are saying they need in their lives. So that's really, really powerful. And that contemporary view is what we're going to be missing out on here if we don't have these surveys and studies.
So it's a waiting game for the Growing Up in New Zealand study. No one's saying too much, but we do know that Auckland University is working on a plan to keep it going, and the government is also looking at funding options. But what about that crucial information about poverty persistence that we know so little about, that Stats NZ's Living in Aotearoa study was going to answer? Laura Walters again.
They think that now they can gather that data from other means, though a mix of administrative data, so things that already exist, like tax data, for instance, and the Household Economic Survey, which is a really good fit-for-purpose survey, but it doesn't have that longitudinal aspect. It's just a snapshot in time. So they think that might be a more effective or efficient way of gathering this data.
But that's not what everybody thinks, is it? I mean, you talk to Kate Prickett from Victoria University, who's very concerned about it being scrapped.
Exactly. So people who know far more about statistics and social and household statistics than I do are really worried about this ending. They don't believe that using other data available like the Household Economic Survey or administrative data will do the trick. They say it'll just be kind of a hodgepodge mix of things thrown together, and there will be people who are missed. So there'll be people who slip through the cracks, especially those more vulnerable people that are harder to get data from. There's also people like, as well as this, you know, the statisticians and people who work in that area, there are child poverty experts and people like the Chief Children's Commissioner who are incredibly concerned about this. They say that if you want to have the best policies and the most effective policies, you also need to have the best data. And it's not about finding efficiencies or cost-effective ways of gathering data. It's about finding the richest, highest quality data so that you can target those policies to those kids and make sure that the money is going where it needs to go.
It makes you wonder about longitudinal surveys full stop, doesn't it? That clearly they cost millions and millions to run. It is much more difficult to get back to the same people year after year, time after time. I mean, is this whole area up for a shake-up, do you think?
It does seem that way. You know, as you say, it's not just this Living in Aotearoa survey that's having issues. There's, of course, also the Growing Up in New Zealand study that is, you know, its future is up in the air there. And more broadly, you know, there are issues with longitudinal research both in New Zealand and overseas. But there is a reason that this research is done, right? We've spoken about the richness of the data, the quality of the data, going back to these families and these people year after year and seeing how their lives have changed and how different policies have, I guess, had an impact on them and their life. So yes, it's incredibly expensive. Yes, it's very difficult to do. And so maybe right now when, you know, not just New Zealand, but countries around the world are facing cost of living crises and are trying really hard to tighten their belts, maybe this isn't seen as a priority area. The difficult thing here, or the counterfactual, is that if you don't spend the money on this, you could end up having a lot of policies that aren't targeted in the right areas. And then you end up with this thing called leaky sieve policies, right, where the government's spending millions or maybe even billions of dollars on things like welfare or policies targeted to vulnerable groups. And there's no way to measure whether it's getting to the right people and whether it's actually having an impact or having the impact that they want. So while it's expensive to get this data, it might also be saving us money or making sure that money is well spent in the long run. So potentially cutting these is quite short-sighted.
And you could argue that the government at the time could use it as, you know, not having the data, could use it as an excuse for not funding a program, you know, like I'm talking about child poverty, which is an area that has a very big gap in knowledge, I understand.
Yeah, exactly. So it's hard to say that something isn't working or that something is tracking poorly if you don't have the data to say that. So I guess another way of saying that is this Living in Aotearoa survey was set up to measure whether families or children were living in persistent poverty. And if you don't have that data, then you're not going to have a measure of whether there's persistent poverty. So it might look really good for the government. You might be able to say, oh, we haven't got very many families living in persistent poverty. But can you say that truly if you don't have the data to back it up? So, yeah, if you don't have the data there to measure something or to back something up, then I guess you can't really hold a government to account, can you? And I think that this really gets to kind of an interesting issue with this particular government, who, to borrow a phrase from the Prime Minister, Christopher Luxon, is...
So we are going to be ruthlessly focused on outcomes and we're going to continue to be focused on delivering results for all New Zealanders.
So this government has spoken a lot about setting targets, about measuring outcomes, about using data to hold itself to account and to make sure that it knows that it's spending money in the right places and not wasting money. But if you don't have the data, the high quality data to measure that kind of stuff, then what do those targets mean? What do those outcomes mean? What do they even stand for? You know, and this government's also been speaking about bringing back that focus on social investment, which was pioneered in New Zealand by Sir Bill English, which means a specific targeting of funding and policies to those who need it most. So rather than kind of broad brush spending on a general group, a really specific targeting of money. Again, you can't do that if you don't have the data to know exactly where that money needs to go. So, yeah, there are always trade-offs for cost cutting. And it might mean that things look good for the government because, like you said, then we don't have the data to say when things are going wrong. But you're not able to measure whether you have effective policies. And at the end of the day, surely that's what any government wants to do, implement effective policies and make sure they get good return on investment.
Data relating to children. The fact is that needs to be above party politics. It's why, for example, when it comes to the kaupapa of child poverty, I'm calling for that to be an ongoing project of national significance from successive governments. And what that means is that it needs commitment over time from governments to policies and investments that are going to help drive us forward and make progress on lifting children out of poverty. To do that, we need to have good data.
So what do you want? want? You want certainty for the Growing Up in New Zealand study, and what do you want the living in Aotearoa study to be reinstated? What would you like to happen?
Well, when it comes to living in Aotearoa, I think we're clear that the government statistician, the decision has been made to stop that survey. It has stopped. That Stats New Zealand has said that they will be using an enhanced version of the Household Economic Survey to be able to measure persistent poverty. So what I'll be looking to do in terms of that survey is to really understand what does an enhanced Household Economic Survey actually mean? And how are we going to get to the level of richness of detail that we need to around the what and the how of the impact of poverty persistence on children. When it comes to growing up in New Zealand, I'm really pleased that Minister Upston has said that this government does want to continue that survey and that it's looking at funding options. And I really encourage that. I want to see that survey continue. These children are now coming up to age 14, 15. We've followed them over time now through their early childhood into school, coming now into the teenage years, and the richness of that picture and understanding of children's lives, their development, their health, their well-being is pretty incredible, and it's a world-leading survey.
How close can you get to the minister like Louise Upston, that you know, the person who's making the ultimate decision on the funding, and really push the case? I mean, do you feel like the decision makers are listening to you?
I meet regularly with Minister Upston and with ministers across the government. And so we're often speaking about the issues that really matter to children in this country and to their rights and to advancing those things. And so in my conversations with the minister, I'll keep bringing forward the importance of us having that robust disaggregated data, including longitudinal data about children. I am encouraged by the fact that she said that the government is committed to continuing to have data from things like Growing Up in New Zealand, and I really just encourage her the government to follow through on what they've said around looking into continuing the funding for Growing Up in New Zealand. And when it comes to living in Aotearoa, really looking hard at how we are going to not lose that richness of picture that we need to about poverty persistence that affects children and whānau in our country.
But it's too late really, isn't it? I mean, we have lost it.
Yeah, well, sadly, when it comes to living in Aotearoa, it does seem that it is too late. So now the focus does need to go on how is that enhanced household economic survey that Stats New Zealand talks about, what's that actually going to look at? How are we going to ensure that it gets as rich a picture as it possibly can? How are we going to see a look in to children's lives and the impact of poverty persistence that, unfortunately, without a longitudinal survey, I do worry that we're not going to get as rich a picture as we really, really need to.
That's it for today. The detail is supported by RNZ and NZ On Air. Jeremy Veal engineered this podcast. Alexia Russell and Davina Zimmer produced it. Thanks to Laura Walters and Dr. Claire Achmad. I'm Sharon Brett Kelly. Ka kite.